Good evening, poets, appreciators of poetry, everyone here. Welcome to the Sacramento Poetry Center. This is our Monday night reading series. We do it every Monday night. I'm the president of the Poetry Center. I'm the Sacramento, I'm Stuart.
Welcome, welcome, everybody. This is Sharon Smith, and this is I Am Big Podcast, where we talk to poets, performers, and artists of the Sacramento area. I got a treat for y'all. Today, we're going to talk to El Presidente, the man himself, the SPC new appointed champion. I'd like to give y'all Stuart Canton.
Sharon.
What's up? How you doing, man?
I'm doing good. Wow, that was an exciting intro. I haven't felt that energy while being inside all this time. It was good to feel it.
So I called you to do the interview and stuff because, you know, since we are now in COVID moments, COVID-19
moments,
most definitely. I just wanted to talk to you about some of the new ideas you think, since we are getting ready to go into National Poetry Month. And also talk to you about what made you get into poetry. So why we start there first? What's the origin story of Stuart Canton in poetry?
Oh, well, I got into it for the money and the fame, of course.
Darn it.
I've always liked writing, and I've always enjoyed some kind of storytelling, and I was a reader. I was that nerdy kid in the back reading books type thing. I've always been writing or reading, but what really got me going, honestly, was I was in a college class at ARC, and I was sort of not really sure what I was doing. And a professor was like, and I just took a writing class. And then my professor was like, hey, you know, there's people who might want to hear this. I was like, there is? You know, like there's people who want to listen. And I wasn't entirely unused to that. I was extremely privileged to have gone to Natomas Charter School. So that was a high school that was focused on art stuff. I know that there's a lot of people in the Sacramento scene who got their kind of, that gives you, I think, a framework. They drop on you the idea that, like, art is something you can do, you probably should be doing, and you should keep pursuing it. So that was always in there. But it wasn't until this professor was like, you know, like, you should go read this somewhere. I was like, man, poetry, I never really thought about that. And I went to Luna's, that's where they recommended, and I started reading there. And that's kind of where I got my whole thing, was just open mic all the time. Especially when, in 2008, when the housing market crashed and everything, our last giant economic downturn, I had a lot of time on my hands. And so I was like, well, let's turn to poetry. And again, open mic all the time. It was Luna's all the time.
Okay. So you're also a teacher of a poetry teacher, or do you basically do like MLA or something like that?
No. Yeah. I mean, I wish I taught poetry. I am an instructor at American River College. So I work in their reading and writing, like a tutoring almost is what it's like. It's their writing center basically.
Okay.
And so, but there are a lot of students that come through looking for poetry advice and things like that. And I totally will do that. And I actually have even been called in. Someone will come in and say like, hey, I've got a poetry question. Do you want to come on? So I do get to do it a little bit, but not that often. It's mostly writing composition, things like that.
And I noticed you also been the editor for even like Poetry Now. Have you also been editor in for some of the literary journals at American River or even at Sac State?
Yeah, so at American River College, I was a staff editor for the poetry department of the American River Review. And then at Sacramento State, I started out as one of the team editors, and then I was a co-executive editor with Jason Shapiro for their journal there, which the Calaveras Station is what they call theirs.
Is that where you met Jason at?
I met Jason at American River, I think. It's hard to, I don't know how. Where did I meet you? I met him the first time at American River College, and I think it was at their big conference they were doing. It was they did a conference for a little while called Summer Words.
Okay.
And they brought out big names like Rita Dove and T.C. Boyle, and those were pretty cool conferences at a pretty affordable price. A lot of students could get in pretty affordably. And so that was, I think that might have been where I really started hanging out with Jason.
Oh, so was he the one that kind of made you more of a poet enthusiastic?
I would say we honed each other.
Okay.
I think that, like, yeah, that's one of the, you know, like, I don't know, it just depends on what your community is like. You need people who, like, help sharpen, you know, steel on steel. I think you might have instructors, or you might have events or something that really challenge you, and those might be more like the whetstone, right? They really sharpen and cut a new edge into your poetry. But I think that those are far and few between, just like knife sharpening. It's far and few. This is, I don't know, I'm going with this metaphor. I'm going to follow. But I think that what you really need more often, like with knives, is just the steel, right? Just the ordinary realigning, focusing, keeping on the sharpest edge you can. And I think that Jason would definitely be in there as well. That's what, for me, college was really good for that. You know, it forces you into an environment where you're accountable to a lot of different people. A lot of different poems, and you have people making you write, and you get that honing and sharpening and honing all over again. So yeah, that's I would say that's where that fits.
It's actually interesting because he's taken over your job as an editor of poetry now.
Yeah.
So it's almost like you passed it off the torso.
yeah, it's cool. It's right after I graduated, I started on the board of the SBC, and they asked me to take over Poetry Now, and I had that for a little bit. And then when I got voted as president, which was a big surprise and an honor, I found that I could not keep up with the Poetry Now. So I'm glad to have Jason. It's also Katia Monterrey and Emily Ann Ferguson are two other people I might know, and they're all on the team. They all actually approached me at the same time. There's always been just like one or two editors at Poetry Now. Well, I shouldn't say always. It's been around for like 30 years. But in the recent like 10 years or so, there hasn't been a huge team for it. Then when I got from three different sources, so the one was like, oh, I heard Jason might be interested. And they're like, oh, Emily Ann was asking if there was anything she could do. Oh, Katia was. I was like, you know what? This sounds like a dream team. Like, guess what? You're all doing it.
So there you go.
I'm really excited to be able to have that new team there. That's one of the things that you are starting out saying for National Poetry Month. They're going to be running a poetry, like a contest, not a contest necessarily, but like it's a challenge. That's the best way to put it. And they're saying like, right, normally the submission periods for Poetry Now are like quarterly or ongoing, rolling. And so what they're going to do is they're going to have just a month, like a 1 month submission period open, say, this is the poetry challenge, is write as much as you can and then submit poems to us in this single month. But then they're going to do, I think they're going to do a bunch of other things. They're still working on it. Yeah.
So one thing we met each other from Danielle and Danielle's, She's people's. That's shout outs to Danielle. But I didn't know that you were writing books until your last book you had on the field guide of extinction. Mm-hmm. I didn't know how many books you read. How many books have you written?
So I write individual poems and I submit those to get published places. And then what I've done is I've done three books. I think I've done three little chap books so far. The first one I did really early on. I would have brought a picture. I might have it on my shelf. I'm not sure. It's buried somewhere. But it was a little chap book that I self-published. And by self-published, I mean I stapled it is what I'm trying to say. Folding, stapling, self-publishing thing. So that's how I got started. I was like, Richard Hansen over at the Book Collector, may the Book Collector rest in peace. They're not there anymore. But Richard Hansen used to run that place, and there were tons of readings there. This was, again, like 8, 9, 10. But he was doing even before me. But and so he showed me some of those book folding methods, and Frank Andrick, too, other long-time
second. I know Frank, yeah.
Yeah. I got started with that, too, because I was like, man, you know, I don't want to pay for software. I'm having trouble with this. And, like, you know, what we used to do, we would just photocopy and we would turn it in different ways and like white it out and do all this stuff. I was like, oh, okay, yeah. I was over here thinking about computers. That sounds good. So that's how I made my first one. It was all just photocopies and white out and then stapling it together by hand.
Nice. What about the second one?
The second one was, well, and then in between, I did these little trifold, like a 8.5 by 11 sheet folded like a pamphlet.
Okay.
I don't know how many of those I did. People might have those. I actually saw one for sale on eBay. It was really surreal. Someone was selling one of them for like $30.
Whoa.
It wasn't even a good one.
Selling your stuff without you knowing it.
Yeah. I was like, what? Okay. Trifold, I put like a cover, a title, a picture on the front, open it up. The poem takes up however much space it takes on the inside.
Right.
But then in the middle was like a contact thing. On the back was, I don't know, it was usually blank, or I'd say, I did a quality you can read publications, what I made up, and I put that on the back.
Okay.
And so I did I did 4 or 5 of those. And that was, I mean, because to me, this is just, you're asking how I got started with this. A lot of it was just like self published. I was just like, look, like, you write something you think is decent, like, you could, a great way to share it is just to print it. And it's so easy to do that. It's really easier than it has ever been to share the written word. And so, and I find that people like artifacts. I think that they have like a power. I don't know. I think if you tell someone to download a PDF or whatever,
mm-hmm.
It's not that it's not cool. It's just that I think that people don't feel the same way as if you go like, the reactions I got from this trifolded thing, you know, I just print out an 8.5 by 11 piece of paper, fold it myself, and hand it to someone. They go like, "You're published. Who publishes this for you?"
Right.
And I do it, and I fold it, and you know, it looks all right. So that was kind of I did a few of those. So I don't remember how many of those I did, but they got a better reaction than I had imagined. And then I didn't really put anything out for years. And then I wrote something that I'm not sure if I like anymore or if I don't, but it's it doesn't even have my name on it, and it's a whimsical corpse, and it's like a surreal head trip. It's totally different than anything. So my idea was like, there's the Zen drawings where you circle around
right
a singular thing, you just draw one circle, and I thought what I was trying to do was pick like a central feeling or emotion, like a certain type of content, and then not without any kind of regard for the language or what it meant or how it felt right. That was where the surreal bent was. I just wrote strange pieces, and I just put them all together in a way that felt right.
Hmm.
And it was, I don't know if it's good or not. there are parts of it that I think worked. There are parts of it I think that were pretentious and bad. And then there are parts of it that are fun. And then the new one, that's the one that you were talking about, the field guide.
Yep.
That's Jeffrey Neal publishing. That's the first time I've ever had a book put together that was published by someone else. The other ones were all just me putting things together, finding out ways to do that and distributing it myself. And so then Jeffrey Neal was, I asked him I'm like, hey, you haven't put any of those books out in a long time. When are you going to start doing that again? He was like, I should do that again. Do you want to be in it? And I was like, oh! And so at the time, I'd been writing a lot of eco-poetry stuff. And I found that seemed to really, that was something that really stuck for me when I discovered that it made sense to me in the way that other things hadn't, that I had experimented with, like the possibly colossal failure that is the surreal chapbook. But with this one, I was like, I feel like I've got something that is uniquely me and is going. And so when he offered me the chance to put together a chapbook, I collected a couple of poems I had already written in college, and then I wrote a few new ones and gave it to him. And that's the story of the chat. So that's the field guide.
Nice.
So I haven't, depending on how you define publishing, I have only been sort of published once in the ultra micro press which I think is really cool because, I mean, I don't know. I like the micro press idea. I don't. Sometimes I feel like the big presses just get Random House. They might be evil. I probably shouldn't say that on any kind of recording. I mean, I love all the giant publishers. They want to call me. They can. I don't have enough poems for a book, but I could if they called me.
And being that it is now that you are the president of Sacramento Poetry Center, how does it feel being a president of a poetry group? Well, more than a poetry group, it's almost like you're part of a community now, gone into the political side of poetry than just being a participant.
Yeah, it's a lot of work and it's different. It's a totally different game, you know. It's like,
because you became the president in, what, 2017?
That's 18. It's been a year and a few months. So yeah. It's only been, I haven't even been 2 years yet. I've done everything once. I still feel like I'm figuring it out. I'm like, oh yeah, we do that. And I did it once. Let's see if I can do it again. I have to wait a whole year to find out if I can do it again. it's different, you know. I mean, it's not the sexy stuff, you know. It's not like, it's like, hey, these are the tax forms you have to file. You know, you have to make sure that the rent is paid and you know, it's all that kind of stuff. It's a lot of organizational development, and which is a great experience. And I think there's a lot of people who really value the presence of the Sacramento Poetry Center, and so to be a steward of that is a challenge and an honor that I'm happy to do, at least for now. And so it's challenged me. It's different. The same as working on your own poetry and trying to do that, you know, because you're trying to set up a space for other people to do their work. At least that's the way I see it, is that I feel like for the Poetry Center, you know, the goal is to try to create even metaphorical space, as we're doing now online, you know, and create a space for other people to do cool things and to be a place where people can read something and discover their own voice or find out that a poem works sometimes or doesn't work other times. You know, all the stuff that people do both on open mic and when they tour around pushing their books and things.
And since we are in the trying times, doesn't that kind of make your president position a little bit more eyes on me type of thing, where it's like, oh, okay, so how are we gonna do this now? I know your predecessor, I know your predecessor Bob, he still helps you out, but you know,
yeah,
you do have more say now of the field.
I mean, Bob did a lot, and he was the poet laureate of Sacramento. And after he was president, and then he was president at the same time. And you know, it's great to be able to learn from him, because he's done a lot for poetry in Sacramento and also for the Poetry Center. And then now, it's definitely changed the way things are going, and I do feel like, I don't know. We'll see. I don't know. I mean, these kind of situations are like, this can easily sound horribly calloused, but I mean, as much as they're horrible, there's also opportunity, you know? And I think that, you know, while we shouldn't ignore the what's bad about it, like, the online program could be a really cool thing.
Yeah.
Anyway. Yeah. So I'm eager to take that and see where we go with it. So I don't know. I'm wondering.
It's fine. But I always ask questions to all my guests and stuff. So being that we do have people who write books and stuff, and they're the literary poets, and then we also have people who do performances on stage and stuff. We have the page versus the stage. What do you feel more comfortable with, being on the page, the stage, or both?
You know, for me personally, I like both. I think they're just two different things. I don't see that. I'm tapping again. Sorry. I don't see that. They're totally I think they're very different, and I think there's exciting and interesting things about both for myself. You know, I have pieces that I hold on to that I'm like, oh yeah, this is going to be one that's going to be fun to read. I'm like, this is the reading piece. This okay. is for sure. And then I have other ones where I'm really working with the page. I love working on the page. Like, I'll tell you that as far as maybe a preference, mm-hmm. I might say I prefer the page, but I like to do, I don't know if it'll show up on here, in the middle. Like, let's see if we can get this in here.
Okay. Yeah.
Like, this is one of my poems in here, a concrete poem, which yeah. I haven't, and you can't, wow. I don't know if you can read it, but.
Red leaves on green
fruit. Yeah, 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 okay, yeah. So, like, this is Sequoia Sempervirens, and I really love this poem for a lot of pretentious reasons that I feel weird when I talk about them, but I've never done another concrete poem. I've tried them, but that's the only one I've liked. So I like being able to do stuff like that on the page. I think the page is a really interesting thing. I think that, you know, the way lines are broken is something that you can't necessarily do verbally. You know, that you can't, there's no sonic way. I mean, some poets will do that lilt, right? Like at the end of a line, gentle at first, like the whisper of a torn page. And it's that, like, that weird upward lilt lets you, like, cue you that that's a line break. But it's not really the same as, like, watching the line breaks and going, okay, what's happening at the end of each line? What does each one lead to? Like, what new meanings are created by the page? So I really like the way that words are given a concrete space in the world, and then you get to, like, building blocks, move them around. And that, like I showed you with that poem, the Sequoia Sempervirens, they don't necessarily have to have a normal syntactic meaning from left to right in English across a page. I just think that the ability to give them a physical presence that exists, and then they get to sort of resonate and bounce off each other, like one word on the page is like exhibiting a certain kind of energy. The moment you put another word next to it, kind of energy, and then you add the third word, and that throws off the other two energies, and maybe you want to knock that word out, or maybe you want to keep it. And so the physical words next to each other become this whole field, and so you can, people, when they read it, they get like this, your eyes just go out. And I think it can be like music, you know. I think music is more naturally visceral because it doesn't engage that active reading, right? But I think that the concrete quality of words on a page allow for some really interesting things that the sonic aspect doesn't. At the same time, of course, there's some people who believe that, you know, a poem isn't real until it's been realized in sound, right? It's not real to them when it's on a page, right? I'm over here giving it concrete qualities. I'm saying it's concrete, it's on a page. But there's some people saying unless it exists somehow in form of vibration, like, unless the air is moving, the word ceases to exist. And so,
even if they read it and it just goes in their mind?
Well, I mean, again, I like page a lot. So I think that the power is still there. I think a poem should be something that people, you know, it's like entering a field, right? It's like something in Star Trek where you see, like, it's inside a strange force field and it goes out, right? The poem should be something nearly tangible, an experience that you enter, and at best without control. Like, you should somehow lose something to the poem, and it should take you somewhere, and you feel a bit like you weren't entirely in control of that kind of a thing. But I think that, so like I said, some people think that the words don't really exist unless they're sonic. I don't feel that way. Like you said, it exists in our minds. Like, I think there's a lot of ways that poetry exists, you know, but I think that back to the stage versus the page, I think there's some things that just either they're physically not possible. Like I showed you, like I have read that poem, but it's not the same as seeing it, right? That poem truly does need to be seen. But then there's some poems that I think aren't that great on a page. They don't really look that good, you know, they're not interesting. But when you hear them, they're like, oh, good Lord, what a great poem, you know? And I think that, I think things like humor or, I don't know, there's too many things to break down because there's also physical presence. I think that just that performance, but even if you don't go perform, I guess that's another thing too. I think stage breaks down into two kinds of things, right? There's reading it, right? You could read a poem, and even if you put a decent amount of energy into it, you would still have something that is closer to someone reading to someone than it is to someone acting. And then there's the other side, the other side of performance poetry, where it's like, it's truly like, it's a lot like an actor. You know, you're pulling on the same kinds of skills. And so,
it's almost like a movie. Basically, you just see it once, and it's, unless you go back and see it again, it's basically just there. Yeah.
And I think that, I mean, I think when you, I think bad reading out loud is never good. And so I think that you have to have an element of performance always when you read out loud, right? That the best even the ones who aren't like performers, when they read out loud and they read well, there's an element of performance. So I think that's, reading out loud is probably always a performance in some respect,
right?
But then there's like the other extreme where you're like really performing. So all I mean is that I think that's really cool, and I like to read out loud too, and I have some poems that I think are hilarious or fun or scary or interesting out loud. Some of my poems that I think are okay on the page, right, I really like being able to read them because I want people to hear like a certain kind of pacing or whatever. I mean, I try to put that pacing into the way I break the lines. I hope that people will read it that way. What's that Cormac McCarthy quote? Good writing, yeah, I'm paraphrasing, but good writing doesn't need punctuation. Like, you should just write it in such a way that someone reading it would follow it. Like, if you're, it's like your sentences should be constructed such that they punctuate themselves. You know, is basically his argument. Throw out your punctuation. If someone can't read your sentence and understand what it means without punctuation, then it's a bad sentence. But that's because he's Cormac McCarthy, you know? So, whatever. I'm just saying, so like, there's ways you can kind of try to do, give the performance on the page, but I think there's still nothing like reading to a group of people. And then you can feel their energy too. I like that. I love the, I don't know, that's why I started with open mic, you know? And I love the, I don't know, like I love going to jazz, especially improvisational jazz. And I love those moments when, you know, you can, like, it's not working. And you know it's not working, and the band knows. It's really awkward. It's like the whole room, like, I'm not playing an instrument, but I'm going, oh. And the band is going, oh. And we're all going, oh. And it's like a collective, oh. And then it starts to work. You're like, oh, wait, this is working. And everyone is like, hey, and we're not doing anything. I'm just sitting here, man. You know, but for some reason, like, it's like created by the entire space. And everyone there. So that's something that I think you can do with poetry, too, that you'll never get that. Like, I don't know, that type of dialogue is just something that you can't get on a page. So I like both. I probably prefer the page because I really like what you can do with a page, but I could never give up, like, actually read. I miss reading when I don't get to read. You know, I like being able to read to people and, like, get the back and forth, and I really enjoy that aspect of it.
I just realized. So you don't read during your poetry hosting. You just kind of just host and then just let the crowd do, or the host, the features come in. Why don't you read?
I feel weird about reading. A lot of people do it, and I don't judge them. Sorry, I won't like say that I don't do it for me. I don't want anyone to feel like I'm accusing them of something. But I feel strange when I feel like when I'm hosting, it's my job to be a good host to their stuff, right? I don't want to be too interesting or too, I think my job is to be entertaining to a point, but I want to facilitate other people.
Woo. I always forget to introduce myself when I do these hosts. I would just imagine a lot of people are like, man, who was that weirdo up there? I don't know. Just kept talking. But then thankfully someone read a poem. God. Why? I'm just going to go through a few announcements for what's coming up at the Poetry Center. There's obviously tonight, and then
sharing their work. And so I usually don't like to I've thought about reading, you know, reading other people's. I mean, I've seen some of the most gracious poets. Some people listening might know, like Mario Ellis Hill. Yeah, I mean, I think that some of these, man, some of the most gracious poets I know, you know, like, it's really definitely about everyone else at their reading, you know, so there's just no ego in it, and they still read poetry, right, and it sounds great, and I love it. I just, for me, I tend to feel strange if I'm reading my poem at a time when we're here for other people's poem, you know. I think, you know, that's just how I feel. I mean, like I said, I wouldn't, I don't know, if someone asked me, I probably would, but I try to keep them, that my poetry nights about other people and what they're doing. And I even, and you'll notice even, I don't know, I try to also be, when it's time for featured poets, I try to be a little bit more in the back and be like, hey.
So our featured reader tonight is, one of our hosts likes to refer to her by her website name. It's great branding. But she's more than a website. Izzy Lala is a poet and artist who grew up in Sacramento, California, where she studied studio art and journalism at CSUS. And from an early age, Izzy Lala has used written poetry as a means of self-expression and therapy.
Sure, they are cool, awesome. And then at the open mic, I'll get a little rowdier, you know, because I feel like I have a little more space to do that. But even then, I don't like to. You know, I'm hosting it for other people. I guess it's a little bit like how I like to cook for people. I'm like, you know, I'm doing this for you. This is my service for you. You know, I'm here hosting it for you to be here so that you can enjoy other people and them. You know, I'm going to be like, hey, let me make you a cocktail. Like, there you go. If you enjoy that over there. I don't, you know.
You are the bartender who wanted to.
Yeah, maybe that's it. I'm the bartender of poetry. I want to create a space where other people are having a really good time and sharing with each other. I don't necessarily need to be the one who's, you know, reading my poetry. That's just how I feel. And it's not, like I said, I've seen really gracious people do it and it's fine, you know, but I just feel weird sometimes about doing it. Bartending is a good one. I'm always a bartender. I've been a bartender. And so maybe that's all it is. Maybe I just can't escape bartending instincts.
Speaking of which, since you have been a bartender and also a general manager at the Grand, mm-hmm. What would be a good wine that you would drink during this crisis?
Oh man, a great wine for a pandemic pairing.
Yes.
What wine pairs well with a pandemic? Man, you know, I'll be honest, this is a weird, like, comfort wine, right? Like comfort food. Yeah. There's certain wines that I think, oh man, just drawing out my inner douchebag, right? Like, no, I think like, no, I mean, really, like, I've been drinking Zin. I don't drink Zin usually, right? I really don't. I like more nuanced wines than Zin, but I'm not going to lie. I've been picking up like Trader Joe's, $4. Their Coastal Zin is actually pretty good, as is their Reserve Organic Grapes Zin. And I've been drinking those because it's like, it's that perfect, like, oh, it's like $4. It's not that much, you know, not going crazy here. And then it's like rich and dark and it's like heavy, but it's also kind of fruity. So it's not like too many weird flavors. It's mostly like the bright fruit with some dark, heavy notes. And you're just like, yeah, you know, like it's like a comforting kind of a warm, fruit forward drink that you don't have to think too much about, and it feels like staying inside by the fire. Like that's how I feel. I mean, I usually like I love Pinot Noir. That's like one of my favorite grapes, man. Like I'll spend a lot of money on a Pinot Noir. I'm about it. I love those. They've got like so many interesting like light notes. I like lighter bodied wines. Like I like a lot of Italian wines too that are just I love my favorite wine ever is my favorite grape is probably Tempranillo. Yeah. I feel like it's a weakness as a wine person because I've never had a Tempranillo I didn't like. I've only ever had Tempranillos I like more or less than other Tempranillos. But a lot of those I love have like, especially the, I like the Spanish ones that have really austere qualities. They, you know, the leather and tobacco type stuff that people talk about, that like it tastes like licking some the old boot. Yeah, exactly. Yeah. Oh man. Yeah. If you could just like stuff a boot with oak and tobacco and then take a big sniff and then lick the boot, that's like the, and then like maybe like a dash of berry, and it's just like, I love that stuff. But again, during the pandemic, what am I drinking? I'm drinking $4 Trader Joe's Zin, something nice and round and warm and comforting, you know, something that goes great with like movie that you like and some pizza, you know.
Nice.
That's my wine answer. Wine for the pandemic.
There you go. So since we come to a close and stuff, I was wondering if you can give out your social media so people can get a hold of you or
So on Facebook, it's facebook.com/Stuart, the letter L Canton. That's my initial, Stuart L Canton. And then Instagram, it's also Stuart L Canton. And then it's all Stuart L. Canton. I managed to get that so far. Watch everyone go out and steal it now. TikTok. I'm not on TikTok right now. Watch someone be like, Stuart L. Canton, I'm going to charge you $50 for it now.
Oh, wow. You
know? Your name hostage on TikTok. But no, it's Stuart L. Canton. And it's on, the ones I use most are Facebook and Instagram. I'd like to use Facebook more, but Facebook algorithms just keep pushing me. They keep holding me back, man. They want me to spend the money. But I post on Instagram, too. I'll post food and wine there occasionally on Instagram, as well as poetry. Facebook, I mostly just focus on poetry. I'm trying to think, is there anything else? I don't think so. Email, I don't know.
Do you have your Instagram?
Stuart L. Canton.
Okay. So everything's all Stuart L. Canton.
Yeah.
Okay. Okay. Yeah.
Okay.
Even your website?
My website is it's a little weird, right? I get this is one of the quarantine to do lists is I gotta get my website. If you go there, it's www.stuartlcanton.com.
Yep, I've been there.
And okay, wow.
I stalked you.
I hope it looks so fast. But the website won't work for some reason if you don't type in the www dot. I have no idea why. It's super weird, and a lot of people will just put it in stuartlcanton.com and they'll be like, does it exist? So I need to fix that. So hopefully by the time anyone's watching this and going there, I'll have fixed it. But
okay.
Yeah, www.stuartlcanton.com. I have some poems there. I have some old poems.
You have this.
Yeah. Oh, look at you, man, doing the research. I feel, yeah. That Pierce poem, I really want to rewrite that Pierce poem.
Okay.
I really like it, but I really want to tweak. I don't know. That was one of my first. That was like eco poetry before I knew what eco poetry was. And that it's like, and then when I ran into eco poetics, I was like, oh, this is like what I already like to do, but like it's better than what I've been doing. So I started falling into that. So. Yeah, that would be. And I'll post sometimes on the Sacramento Poetry Center. I know, tappy tappy.
It's good.
Yeah, I'll post sometimes through the Sacramento Poetry Center, but mostly it's Stuart L. Canton would be the way to reach me.
Most definitely. Well, we're going to end off with that, but we are going to do one poem, if you have one. And so we're going to do one poem before we close off shop.
A Field Guide for the Coming Extinction is what I think I'll read.
Good title.
Get a little water. Thank you. A Field Guide for the Coming Extinction. I thumb through the small book without success, flipping past drawings of birds and words, trying to make sense of their sounds via onomatopoeic simulations, reaching to sync with what I've just heard somewhere above. But the sensation resists a parallel description in the text, and I think maybe I have always believed too much in words. For without a match, I'm left tracking over empty ground, searching ashen bishop pines, pointing into the sky, squinting after animals I never saw, while the dead trees bound in my hand recite invented names, and blank eyes lie side by side for easy comparison. Vague illustrations meant to reveal the truest quiddity. Yet I'm no wiser for having a copy of this guide, for no magic of ink will guide the animals to me or teach me how to call them. And that sound I heard was so fast and so far. It is now quiet. This is how it happens, the great and final absence. Someone looks up from their phone, unsure why they stopped scrolling, and some distant recess of the brain, still able to listen, thinks how silent everything is. It seems like someone took hold of the spine and pulled, glues stretching and breaking, staples popping, until the volume ruptured and the animals were gone. Gentle at first, like the whisper of a torn page, one by one, with the hiss of a blade, pages of species piling on the floor. Those muted figures peeking between the leaves of their kin, back up at the scissors chewing away, the irrelevant entries falling, being swept up after each morning's tally of antecedent beings lost. Each edition is smaller, more expensive to print. The table of contents of animal reductions, those key markings, phenomenal signifiers for split-second recognition of nearly numinal presence, are reduced to absurdity, just a pamphlet. Identification by elimination. Here, right now, this could be it. Cold wind and taste of salt, crouched with an antique tome, waiting for a sound to emerge from some branch I never thought. This day, on the edge, above waves washing onto a gray beach, the burnt forest behind me, in my hand the small soft-bound reminder that once man imagined the seas had edges, where whales were called monsters, long before they understood how small the world would become under the pen of terrifying vertebrates, bipeds that would even write themselves out of the books, given a chance to die well, or pain creation in the passing, they would always choose the path through stone, breaking as the storm rolls in. So finally the wind will blow the remnants of these meager pages to the feet of some new earthling, hungry, hunting for flesh in craggy tide pools, filling with rain. That's a cheery one.
And where can they find your book if it's still out there?
You know, that's a good question. Now that that's a pandemic question. Neil had those, and I'm impressed would put those out. But now things are a little bit underground, so I'm hoping to work on that. I'm hoping to have it on the website soon, and through Facebook and Instagram. If anyone wants to message me through those, I would totally get back to them about how to get a book. But right now, I don't have like a storefront, and so that's gonna that needs to happen next.
Most definitely.
It's getting remote. What it is, we're all remote out here.
No kidding. But no, if you have any last words for anybody, anything, just stay safe, whatever.
Yeah, I mean, right? Like, wash your hands. Yeah. Keep an eye out for Sacramento Poetry Center event. We'll be posting about those. That's one to do. What we want to keep. I want to make sure that, like, I mean, this is a weird time. Some of us are well adapted, right, to being on our own. We're cool with it. We're cool, but some of us aren't. And also, I mean, it's just a weird time. This time of submarine living, right? And so it's time to send some poetry to each other. It's time to remember poems we loved and to share those with each other and write new poems. This could be, like I said, it's weird that you're locked in your little submarine, but maybe now is a great time to do some writing, you know, pour some whiskey, get some writing done.
I have noticed that you've been putting out a couple videos of your poetry and stuff in the summer.
Oh yeah, you know, that's something I've never done. I'm not even reading. I haven't even read anything of mine on those, right? I read some of my favorite poems, you know, different poets that I thought would be either amusing or uplifting, or that reminded me of the situation. I never tried Facebook Live. So yeah, I'm trying. I'm trying to broadcast. Calling this my little space, the submarine of love. Yeah, but trying to get it out there. Just read that. Yeah, with that, I'm just reading other people's poetry. I might do something else with it. I'm not really sure. I didn't have a whole plan with it. I was just like, you know what? I need to learn how to use this stuff. Let me just try it out. So I might do more. I might read my poetry, but I like reading other people's poetry with that too. I think this is a time that we should be, right? We're forced to be not connected. So now is the time to ramp up the connection.
That makes sense.
It can feel a little artificial, you know, but like, it's also a great thing. It's really good. We might see people asking for poetry that never would have asked when they were able to go somewhere else. And then this is the time for us poets to have poems to give to them, even if they're not our own.
And I think on that, we can leave it on a good note. All right. Hey, thanks, Stuart, for doing this with me and stuff. And to everyone else, I'll talk to y'all later, and peace.
For more information, please go to linktr.ee/iambiczine. IAMBICZINE. Thank you.